Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
For the next hour, hear how 13-year NFL vet thinks.
You can't just do it one play. You got to reset. You got to do it over and over and over again. Until we come out here with a win. Let's do it.
This is Brown Safety, Rodney McLeod.
All right, these are the fun ones, right? These are the fun ones after what was a sobering loss on Sunday. Rodney McLeod, stand-up guy. He is here to face the music.
Welcome to the no spin zone.
Yeah, that's right. We're about to get into it. I feel bad. You know, I wasn't here last week, and you got the chair. If you want to switch chairs, feel more comfortable, that's fine.
Yeah, do you feel better in that chair?
No, I feel good. Okay. I'm good, guys. I'm at peace right now.
At peace? Okay.
Whoa. Yeah. With everything, I mean, everything that happened.
I'm in turmoil.
Sunday. Yeah.
I'm in personal turmoil.
I hear you. We got the 24-hour rule, guys.
Thank God you do.
Yeah, we're outside. We're outside that window, so... right now, my emotions are definitely a lot more lively than they were post game and even walking into the building on Monday. Because at the end of the day, man, I woke up this morning, I'm blessed, and I got an opportunity on Sunday to respond the right way and get us back on track. And not only myself, but the entire Cleveland Browns team and organization has that opportunity.
Can you tell me then what to tell the Steelers fans that live in the outer ring suburb that I live in that were ripping me yesterday at youth football practice because my team's 1-2 and their team's 3-0? Can you give me something to tell them? Because mine lasted throughout the day.
I'll give you something that I experienced, right? So 2016, I signed to Philadelphia. I spent four years in St. Louis where we were average. And then 2016, Doug Peterson, first year, I'm there. I'm like, great. And we start off 3-0. And I'm like, you know what? That is exactly why I signed here. You know what we finished that year?
You were out of the playoffs that year, right?
Yeah.
That was the year that Jason Kelce was sitting on the bench crying.
Yeah, 7-9, I think, was the record. Mm-hmm. And we come back that next year and, of course, win the Super Bowl. And I think our first three games, we were maybe two and one, right? Still winning record. But at the end of the day, just because you start 3-0 doesn't mean that that's going to produce a playoff team or even means that you're going to be a Super Bowl contender team. There's still a lot of ball to be played and a lot to figure out. So, yes, congratulations to those who are 3-0. I would love to be 3-0. You know, like we go into each game with the – plan to win, but what's reality is that we're a 1-2 football team, and there are several 1-2 football teams that are out there who I'm sure are going to make the playoffs and end up where they want to be, and I'm confident that we will be one of those teams as well.
We just power ranked those 1-2 football teams.
Yeah, we did.
Just to show how wild in the first 3 weeks this season has been. So obviously you guys aren't where you want to be. I kind of want to get into, you know, the feeling in that game. You guys are back home. The crowd is going nuts after that touchdown to start. One play, one touchdown after the fumble on special teams, and then the interception that gets overruled. I want to know what your vantage point on that entire scenario was, because we had fun.
Well, you know what we want to talk about.
With the 22nd dance.
He knows what we want to talk about, yeah. Don't beat around the bush.
Just overall, that entire sequence, what is going through your mind?
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better start. You know, we wanted to start fast. We wanted to start clean. We wanted to set the tone for the game. And every game starts with a special teams play. And we came out. Tony Brown made a heck of a play. Started things off right. GD gets the fumble recovery, and then, you know, minutes later, 30 seconds later, we're in the end zone, right? Crowd erupts and things are rolling. Shortly after, you know, we get another turnover, and we talked about that. That was the emphasis this week, is how do we one, make it uncomfortable for Daniel Jones, but how do we impact the game defensively? How do we create those turnovers and those opportunities? And we did that, and of course it was neglected by, you know, a penalty. And that was another point of emphasis that was made this week, was we can't allow those penalties to hurt us. And that, in that moment, that hurt us. That took away a scoring opportunity where I'm sure we score off of that interception, and then probably a whole different, you know, feeling that we all have on this Tuesday. You know, that's the honest truth. But at the end of the day, you got to live with what transpired. And so what we have to focus on is we can't allow that moment to deflate us in a way. We have to continue to push forward, even though an adverse moment took place and removed a great play. We got to find a way to move on to the next and do it again.
We can't put Denzel on Malik Nabers?
Why can,
not?
Can we?
Yeah.
We could.
Why didn't we?
Because we believe in all of our guys. If you looked last year, everybody lines up in their same spots. You know Ward is going to be on the left, MJ's going to man the right, and G-New's going to be in the slot. Like, they're not hard to find. You know where to find them. You know how to get to them. And they accept that challenge. And we have confidence in everybody that lines up on that field. So we've never been a matchup-style defense, and we're not going to start doing that this year or next week because, you know, Malik Nabers had a couple touchdowns. We have the same level of confidence in each player, and we feel like we are the best in the league. And you have to wear that crown. You got to protect that crown every time you line up, and knowing that offense, you're going to get their best. And so that's the verdict on that, and that's where that stands.
Well, you know, fans driving around, they're driving into work. A bunch of fans learned the term bracket coverage this week. I never heard it so much, you know, after that game. And obviously, you're living it. You're getting a chance to talk to position coaches and defensive coordinator and head coach. So when we're all wondering, where are the adjustments? How are you guys going to adjust to some things that are happening on both sides of the ball? The thought is, I think, from a lot of fans, like, they didn't make adjustments. Are you guys indeed making adjustments throughout the game? Tell us what is really happening on the football field.
Absolutely. Every time you come off the field, there are adjustments made. There's coaching points made. You know, we sit there with the iPads and we look at each play that was run, whether it was successful or it was a, you know, failed play for us, right? Like, we look at it all, because typically what happens in those games are those successful plays are going to come back later on in the game. You don't know at what point in time, or maybe even some of the unsuccessful plays that they had. So those are very pivotal moments for us that, hey, if you didn't get it right this time, make sure it gets fixed for the next time. But there are constant adjustments that are made from every time we hit the sideline to halftime. And you saw that. And it's a chess match on both sides. They're making adjustments just as much. You come in with the idea of, okay, this coordinator has certain tendencies. This team has certain tendencies. Let's see how they operate in their first 15 plays. And then let's figure out the game as it's going, the way that they are looking to attack us on this particular drive or even throughout the game.
Well, there are a couple of those plays from Nabers where, I'm just a fan at home. I throw my hands up in the air and I say, well, what are you supposed to do? He's going up and he's making insane plays. I don't know that you guys have the luxury of doing that, but it is the NFL. Guys are at the peak of their powers in that sport. I mean, what can you say when Nabers goes up and makes a catch when it was defended well and Emerson is right there and he's just taking the ball out? I mean, what can you say? What does a defense say?
Honestly, I mean, you say, move on to the next play. That's the world that we live in as defensive backs. And you can play 100 great snaps and you give up one, and that is the highlight or the defining moment, right, as a player in the secondary, whether it's a touchdown or explosive play. And, you know, it's at the end of the day, these guys get paid too. To make plays, and it's a competitive game, and you want to see guys compete And MJ does that at a consistent and high level, as we all know. And so, yeah, as much as he knows that how much that play, you know, means, you know, to the team, he would love to do better. I would love to do better, right? On the second time that he scored, I blame myself because I should have had better technique on that right before halftime. And so all you could do is just look yourself in the mirror and get back to the next play. Like, we have to move on. If you continue to dwell on the plays that happened before, you'll never be ready for the next one that presents itself.
Did you hear the boos?
Yeah, I heard the boos.
What'd you think?
Man, it's necessary. We didn't we weren't doing the things that we needed to do in order to win that game. I've experienced it being in Philadelphia. I've experienced it here in Cleveland. And, you know, you look at it as, man, this is a city that is very passionate about their team, about all of their sports teams. And they come there to cheer us on, to be that 12th man, that spark that we feed off of defensively. And we didn't hold up the end of our bargain. And so we have to get that in line. We have to you know, make sure that next time we show up in our home stadium, that we do what we need to do.
Because, I mean, it's the only thing that I would condone. As an outsider, it's the only thing I condone. Like, I don't, anything other than boo, like, you can cross a line without knowing you're crossing a line. A boo is a sound. A boo is a universal way to let people know that you are dissatisfied with what's going on there. And I also think, man, like, you guys, you've answered it right. Miles has answered it right. You know, I've seen fans go at each other. It's like, man, you got to let them let their frustrations out. It is professional sports, Rodney. Like, yeah, they have to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, in this sport, you have to have thick skin. You know, you're going to hear from everywhere, whether it's your home crowd, fan in the street, online, in here.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the game. But I think we have a very resilient and tough group of men that we are going to respond the right way. And so, again, we have a great challenge ahead of us this upcoming week on the road, going against the AFC opponent team, and then, you know, even on this stretch. So we're going to see exactly what we're made of in the character of our team.
You watch a game like last night, and I see Jacksonville just get smoked by Buffalo. It was not a competitive football game. By the end of the first half, the game was over. Have they given up? Have they quit on their head coach down there in Jacksonville? I mean, it's week three. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think there is probably something going on inside the locker room that may even extend to the coaching staff. You know, just it's rare that you see that level of play, or like a blowout, right? You know, this early, you would expect it to be a lot more competitive, especially, you know, 0-2 football team. And, you know, I wouldn't go as far as to saying that they've lost, that Dougie P has lost the guys, but I think there is some form of disconnect that's happening. And, you know, at this point, it's kind of up to a lot of the leaders on the team to take the bull by the horn and figure it out.
This is shocking. And, you know, we look at Trevor Lawrence, like, are we sure he's good? Like, is there favorites being played? But you've been in a lot of locker rooms, man. You had a long career. How many years has it been? 13?
13.
13 years.
Yeah.
So you've had to have seen something like this before. You have to see the warning signs of something like this.
Correct.
Like, I don't know. Like, we live in high school, like, land. That's where our careers ended, in locker rooms. So it's like, I don't understand the workings of a workplace locker room, other than when I have to go in there once a week and I'm forced to go in there once a week. I don't even like being in them. So what loses a locker room? Because we're 1-2. We have to avoid this right now.
Yeah. I think what can ruin a locker room is distrust. The not necessarily taking ownership for what's happening, pointing the finger. You know, when you start to point the finger and make excuses about, well, it's not me, it's the other side, or it's the other guy, or it's the coach, then that's when you start to see a lot of things unfold that are naturally going to translate into negativity. And then what tends to also happen is now little pods start to form within the locker room where you got a lot of whispering going on, and the whispering becomes louder. And now it kind of like takes over the entire locker room. So as leaders on a team, you have to ensure that you infiltrate those spaces, that you're speaking the right thing, because the mental, man, is powerful. The mind is powerful. You know, what we say out of our mouths and the things that we hear, we start to believe ourselves, or we start to consume to the point where now we're living it. And you have to avoid those things from taking place. So that's what I'm most nervous about. If I'm a Jacksonville fan and I'm looking at their team right now, is that, you know, are they going to start to disconnect from one another to the point where, you know, it's now hopeless and there's no point of return?
Now, it's only three games around the league. We stress and stress and stress because, you know, we're in a 1-2 hole. Cincinnati's 0-3. You're seeing other teams that are really good. The reigning.
Don't say the term.
Well, I'm
don't
just,
say the term.
I'm just saying.
Don't say the term. It's insulting to him. It's insulting to me. Don't
seem
say the term.
To me,
don't you do it.
That a lot of these teams have the big picture, outlook, that it's a long season and 17 games. And I angered Ken every time I bring
say
up.
It.
I felt like the first three games for a lot of teams are almost like a quasi preseason.
Ronnie, I'm sorry. I know you got a certified man of God to your left, so I'm going to try to be as clean as I.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
I can about this because I don't want to start cussing in front of a preacher here, okay? But let's be honest here, okay? He calls it preseason. Yeah. And I'm going, wait a minute. If that's the case, then we should be talking about firing people for putting Deshaun Watson behind backups out there because it's quote-unquote preseason. The whole thing we were arguing about before the Seattle game of whether or not to put him out there. Mm. And honestly, I'm taking it on the chin because I'm out there in the community and I got Steelers fans giving it to me. And because of what we do in the company we're owned by, they're based out of New York. So I got Giants fans cussing me out. Guys on the radio out there in New York cussing me out, saying terrible things to me. And I got to tell you as well, Ronnie, I got very little respect for Daniel Jones. Now, you can't say that. I can't. I can say anything I want. I got very little respect, if at all, for Daniel Jones in his play. And I think that if he wasn't throwing to Malik Nabers, he sucked on Sunday. He tried to throw to Wandale Robinson. He's still looking for him. He can't find anybody. I have to sit here and I got to eat this as a fan. So you got to get me out of this utter turmoil, because when he uses terms like preseason, I go, no. Guys will make or break their playoffs and make or break their careers still based on this month, and I cannot get on the radio and tell people it's still the preseason. And I'm damn sure not going to say that in front of a guy who's in his 13th year and expects to go to the playoffs this season.
That's a fact.
So tell me
that's
more.
That's a fact. I don't believe that's true, because at the end of the day, every win, matters. Like you look at it when you're into it, like you're gonna look back on certain games and say, man, that we hope that's not us, but you look back like, man, that game right there was the game that we needed to get in. And so I don't believe that the statement is true where you could say, teams are taking the approach of using the first three or four games to fill things out, because every game is precious. Every game matters, and they all play a matter in, where you ultimately end up at the end of the year. So I don't like that take. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let me put it this way. I just, you see time and time again in this league, you see the outcomes in the first 2 to 3 weeks. I feel like, especially this season, where, like, you guys after the game on Sunday are talking about, well, we hadn't seen some of that stuff on tape. Well, that won't happen by week six. By week six, the tape is the tape. Teams establish their identity. Right now, some teams win football games across the league that I don't think they'd have any business winning a little bit later on. And teams that overhauled maybe their offense, new coordinators, that to me does not feel like in the thick of the season.
But I'm sorry, Roddy, but that's my problem here. What he's saying is my problem. Like, you guys could go out against Kansas City. If you lose by a field goal at home to Kansas City, do you think I'm going to sit here and rip you guys up and down for losing to Kansas City by a field goal, the Chiefs? No. Now, again, my perspective. Mm-hmm. But I'll look at that and go, damn it, had we had won against the Giants, because you should be a better team by the time December comes around. Injuries say something, but whatever. You should be a better team by the time December comes around, as opposed to where you were on September 22nd. I'm going to sit there and I'm going, I cannot believe, and again, I excuse my language, sir, I cannot believe back in September we lost to Daniel Jones and Brian Daboll, who looks like a tow truck driver. No offense to tow truck drivers, that's maybe an insult to them, because I was here in Cleveland when Daboll was still immature and an offensive coordinator and screaming at people's headsets and not doing it the right way. And we lost to a suck-ass organization like that on a September day when everybody was picking us to win.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are no such thing as easy wins in the National Football League. That is a fact. You know, you got to give respect to every player and team that takes that field. And we all know any given Sunday – anything is possible. And if you don't show up, you don't pack everything that you need to pack, your best, you know what I'm saying, technique, your best level of focus, your best level of grit, determination, effort, passion, then what happens is the teams that you should win, you lose to. And the good teams handle their business, whether we're playing an elite team or we're playing a team that, you know, is probably below, our standards, whatever you might call that, right? Like, and more importantly, the game's at home. And I think that's what's most frustrating, you know, to me right now, is we sit 0-2 at home, where last year, of course, man, that was our competitive advantage. And you see the spirit that exists in the stadium, and you've seen it at the beginning of the game, and you saw it even down the stretch. Even when people, man, I don't believe they can come back from this. There was the possibility that we were starting to rally, right? And the crowd's into it, feeding, energy's up, we're getting stops, we're doing what we need to do in all three phases, and we have to find a way to ensure that lasts for 60 minutes of ball and not 10, not 5, 60.
Because that's what I could say these things to Anthony, because we've said way worse things to each other and we'll say even worse things to each other. Is that bothers me so much, because if we start explaining things, we're just going to explain things and then we're not going to have anything to talk about later in the year because the season's going to be a wash. And then it's going to be a very awkward moment and a series of awkward moments that I'm trying to avoid. I do not want to have those moments with you. I mean, these fans are calling us up on Mondays, and they are talking about very serious things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if those questions have to be broached at some point, like, these are not going to be fun Tuesdays.
Yeah.
Every game's got to be serious.
Correct. But I feel like let's be clear, and you can look probably from season to season. You know, you come into the season with expectations on every single team. There's a power rankings, right? Like, that's just to get everybody going. Like, you have to start somewhere, but that's not ultimately how everybody finish, you know, where you end up. And for the first 8 weeks of the season, you don't know who is who. You feel me? Like, things can change. You got Carolina that, you know, all of a sudden beats a Vegas team, like, spanks them. You know, like, that is what you're, you know, those are the things that you're getting in these first 8 weeks. It's a swing, you know, back and forth. And you hope that at the end of the day, you can find, like we've been talking about the last past couple of weeks, your identity. And more importantly, be consistent. That's what, just be consistent in everything that you do. And ultimately, like, that'll prevail. But right now, you know, to say, man, you know, how do we lose to this team or that team? I feel like it's too early. But at the end of the day, you know, we still got a lot more ball to be played, and I'm confident that we can get this thing back rolling.
Are you just like fans when it comes to waiting on MRI results? Because I left the show yesterday. The way people were talking about Myles Garrett and the way that he was hobbling over to the golf cart on Sunday night, the cameras kind of caught him. I was getting nervous, I'll be honest, about the rest of the season. Are you guys the same way as we are, keeping your fingers crossed and waiting on good news for Myles? Because it seemed like yesterday we ended up getting good news that he's going to be day-to-day.
Yeah, not only Myles, but you know, everybody on the team. You know, you don't want to see any of your brothers, you know, exit the game and find out that, you know, they'll be injured for, you know, a significant amount of time. And, you know, that was a point of emphasis for us, is man, making sure that everybody's available and healthy. And, you know, what one of my coaches told me is that, you know, every team in this league experiences like three crises, you know, throughout a season. You don't know what that's going to be, but it's going to happen. You know, I feel like right now, you know, one of our crises is injuries, you know, from training camp all the way up until this point in time, from, you know, our, you know, the list goes on, star players down to, you know, practice squad. Right now we've been hit. And we have to make sure that we weather this storm right now. And it's how we communicate to one another. And more importantly, it's how we emphasize the belief in each other, right? Because that was one thing that we held strong to in Philly that year. We had a lot of top, you know, key injuries, but the belief in each other, belief in the next man, really allowed us to be able to persevere during a true moment of adversity.
Mitch, please. All right, guys, something caught my ear from last night's Commanders win over the Bengals. It stemmed back from earlier this past week, where Cincinnati quarterback Cam Taylor-Britt compared Jaden Daniels in the Washington offense to a college offense.
Yeah, Capone, they don't make them do a lot. So they keep it really simple for them. Nice college offense. Kingsbury's the OC. So, you know, just keep it real simple for them.
Now, of course, after Daniels' solid performance last night over against the Bengals, Zach Taylor, the head coach, was asked about Taylor-Britt's comments and didn't seem to like him.
That's not what we do. That's not what we do. We praise our own team, praise the other team. We don't need to take shots like that. That team hasn't punted in 2 weeks. They've scored on every single possession the last 2 weeks. So I've got a tremendous amount of respect for what they're doing over there. I've known Cliff a long time. I knew paired with that quarterback, this was going to be a very dangerous offense to play against, and they've proven that so.
Well, it's a stupid thing to say. I mean, when you get shredded by a rookie, he goes 21-23. He puts up, you know, two touchdowns, orchestrates the offense brilliantly. You don't want to poo-poo that after the game.
Oh, right? No. I did not hear that before. Thank you very much for bringing that to our attention there, Mitch. Is saying a guy runs a college offense, is that not an insult?
That's an insult. That's definitely an insult.
Even though hands down, you're seeing more attributes from the college offenses in the NFL game than you did 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, that is true. In a space where you didn't necessarily see that occurring, or people, you know, frowned upon it, now you see it a lot more. There's a lot of carryover in a lot of offensive styles in the league.
Go ahead, Tone. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Rodney McLeod in studio with us. So I found this interesting that, you know, you guys are going up against the Raiders this week, and their coach has been very outspoken. Obviously,
we have audio of that, by
yeah,
the way.
Obviously somebody who, you know, at this stage of his coaching career does really mince words. Here's what he had to say about his team's humiliating loss to what we all thought was the worst team in football.
No, they didn't. I think as the game went on, I don't think it was a team. I think there was definitely some individuals that made business decisions, and we'll make business decisions going forward as well.
So business decisions, when he's saying that, I said, we played that audio on Monday. I said, well, you are going to get a very physical Raiders team when you play them this week, because that was a wake-up call. And that does happen from week to week. You know, we went over Kevin Stefanski's record after a loss. It's incredible. You know, the Browns have bounced back big time over the years. Well, this is a brand new head coach, but someone who certainly knows the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Antonio Pierce, I mean, he, of course, player, once player, now coach, defensive player at that. So the way that he is built is off of physicality, toughness, like hard-nosed ball. And so for him to call out his, you know, his team in that way, that is going to send a loud message. And I'm sure he is vocalizing that as, you know, as we speak. And so you got to expect that to translate over into his players, you know, this upcoming Sunday.
So what's the difference between tough talk and, like, making an ass of himself as a head coach? Like, because you can only do that so much. Like, what? It's got to be a fine line between being silly and calling out players and being disrespectful to that. Because it's like, okay, Antonio Pierce played the game at a high level for a long time, was mm-hmm. a very good football player. Mm-hmm. And him saying that about business decisions, I'm going, well, he goes from experience in the locker room as a player, and he knows a business decision when he sees one. Nobody's stupid out here. We all know that some guys are going to do it.
Right.
I don't know if he can continue to do that at some point. Like, it's going to be like, well, aren't you the coach of the football team?
Yeah, correct. I think you have to understand your team. And maybe for him, he knows how his team will respond if he pushes out that sort of narrative. And obviously, I feel like he had to look at the film well enough, maybe, to be able to, you know, make a remark like that. That's a pretty
strong
remark. And so that is going to ruffle some feathers, and people are going to, you know, look in the mirror, is he talking about me? But at the end of the day, he put that identity out for his team. And so, again, they're up and they have to respond accordingly too, and maybe accept his challenge that we embody toughness and like I said, all of those sort of things that I'm sure he's ingrained in that team, and they didn't demonstrate that on Sunday. And so he wants to see a lot more of that show itself on Sunday versus
mm-hmm.
us.
What are you doing out in the community today? I know we got to get going here, but you got your foundation that you're working with. What do you guys got coming up here?
Today?
Not today. I'm sorry. I said today.
today.
The proverbial calendar. The future.
Yeah.
The future.
I do have my mentorship program launching out back in Philadelphia today. So that's exciting. We've expanded not only in one school in Philadelphia, we're now in two, going on year three. So that's good stuff. And of course, we're gearing up, you know, for the holidays in a couple months. So we're preparing for that and just trying to do the best that we can to continue to serve others.
Outstanding.
Yep.
Rodney, thank you very much for the time. Hopefully a much better Tuesday with us next week.
You guys working on a dance for this week?
Yeah, we always got a celebration up. So the drum line, unfortunately, you know, it's gone, it's forgotten, and we got to move on to something else. So we're going to put our heads together. GD normally orchestrates that, and we'll see what we could come up with.
Do you have somebody who's the designated lookout person, looking out for a flag, to wave it off last
Someone's
second?
Someone's going to have to look around to make sure, because you don't want to burn one of those celebrations for no reason.
Yeah, we're not even going to think on that. We're going to stay positive. We're going to go out and get a win on Sunday, come back to Cleveland. And better spirits.
We love it. Rodney, thank you for the time.
You know it.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.